This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome back to the Kennedy Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host, Allison, and today is a special episode that I'm very excited about, a new little series of episodes that will be occasionally happening, and it's going to be fun. But let's get started with the In the News segment first.
Big news story of the past 7 days.
The New York Times published an article about William Vandal Hoeveel, which was a public-minded lawyer and former diplomat who was an advisor to Robert F. Kennedy and an advocate of improving conditions for inmates in New York City jails, and he died on Tuesday at his home in Manhattan at the age of 91. He was a really interesting guy. According to the Times, Mr. Vandal Hoeveel was associated with Kennedy through much of the 1960s, serving as a special assistant when Kennedy was United States Attorney General and advising his campaigns for the Senate and the presidency. In the Justice Department from 1962 to 1964, Mr. Van Hoeveel was active in the civil rights struggle that would define Kennedy's tenure as the nation's highest-ranking law enforcement official. Assigned to Prince Edward County, Virginia, he helped negotiate the creation of a free school system open to black students after the county had shut its public schools rather than allow them to be integrated, as required by the Supreme Court ruling in Brown v. Board of Education in 1954. Admiring his effectiveness in Prince Edward County, Kennedy often turned to Mr. Vandal Hoeveel for strategic advice and support in his successful 1964 campaign for a seat in the United States Senate from New York. Kennedy's always liked to have things, difficult things, done through intermediaries, especially when it came to personal relationships and politics, said Milton Gwertzman, a former close advisor to the Kennedy family. When he was senator, he was always asking Vandal Hoeveel to make certain calls for him that he didn't want to make for himself. He and Mr. Vandal Hoeveel were co-authors of the political biography on his own, Robert F. Kennedy, 1964 to 1968, which was published in 1970. Mr. Vandal Hoeveel was also among the trusted advisors who helped Kennedy plan his presidential campaign in 1968. Kennedy's meetings with his inner circle were often held at Mr. Vandal Hoeveel's Manhattan apartment. That was all from the New York Times article, so feel free to look it up and read the rest of it if you are interested. Next up is the Q&A.
Therefore, in answer to your question,
I thought this was a good question. Would JFK had a chance at presidency if his brother Joe was alive and became president? So, as most of us know, Joseph Sr. obviously had big political ambitions for his oldest son, which was Joseph Jr., and he did pass away in combat. So that obviously made that torch pass on to JFK. So that's what I always believed, and we all believe. But then I was listening to the Schlesinger tapes with Jackie, and she mentions that she didn't like that speculation, that in reality, JFK was much more charismatic than Joe Jr. was, from what she had heard, because she never did have the opportunity to meet him. But she kind of stated in the tapes that there was no doubt that JFK would have been the front runner for the presidency in the Kennedy family. So I have conflicting thoughts about it, but that's what I have heard. Another question, will you ever do an episode on Evelyn Lincoln? And absolutely I will. I find her really interesting because you think about, I mean, she's kind of like this, you know, elderly woman who looks really soft and gentle and personable. And you see her pictures with the kids and giving them candy and all these things. But then you also know that Evelyn Lincoln was hiding a lot of the president's secrets, as in a lot of the affair scandals, a lot of those things. She would be, from what I've read, one of the people that would correspond back and forth to set up things with mistresses and stuff like that. So seems like she would be a very interesting person to do an episode on, and that will definitely happen in the future. Let's move on to our inspiring clip of the week.
One of the inspiring notes.
This week is a little snippet from Maria Shriver.
How do you reconcile fighting for something and still being centered and peaceful? What advice?
Well, I look at my parents, both whom got up every single day until the day they died and fought for something and used their anger really to push the needle. And they both went to church every single day. They both prayed. They both had that kind of silence in the morning. And that was part of their routine. And then they got to the office and all hell broke loose. So I think, but it was never, you know, I think under anger very often and rage is fear. Mm-hmm. And I think using your anger to change the world, like I'm angry that we haven't found a cure for Alzheimer's. I'm angry that researchers haven't focused on women. And so that gets me up and it gets me focused on trying to change that. But also, it's very important to me to have quiet in the morning, to have a form of meditation, and to try to direct myself from a place of calm and strength and not, you know, unbridled anger.
So is that your daily practice, is that you have a morning meditation?
Absolutely. I have a morning prayer of gratitude while I'm still in my bed. And when my feet hit the floor, I'm also very conscious that I'm blessed to actually open my eyes and have my feet hit the floor. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people don't. And people younger than me don't.
Okay, fun announcement. I have decided to start a new occasional type of episode. So you guys are always asking for my book recommendations. As a listener of this podcast, you're probably also an avid reader. We all care about history and learning. So I have decided to start an occasional author spotlight episode where I will speak with an author of a Kennedy-related book. So these will be trickling into my normal episodes occasionally.
It is a most fascinating story. And I must say, it's a beautiful book.
Today's author spotlight interview is with Alexander Carver. He's an author, screenwriter, and playwright, and has written a fantastic book titled Oh Jackie, one I think you all definitely need to check out. Oh Jackie is a story about the internal and external chaos created when an artist with both a Superman and an inferiority complex chooses to be the self he wishes he was instead of the self he truly is. With strong Kennedy ties at the story's core, it is so very entertaining and the perfect summer read. So without further ado, here is my interview with Alexander Carver. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm so excited.
This is great. It sounds like we're both Kennedy junkies, so we should be.
We should get along
famously.
I love it. When I find another, it's like, wow, we have a brotherhood. We found another person that cares about the Kennedys still. It's fantastic.
That's right.
So let's start out. You just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. I've been a writer for, I guess, over 20 years. And I write everything from novels, Oh Jackie, to screenplays, short stories, songs. My wife's a singer, so I figured I'd start writing her some songs, poems. I kind of hit it all. I'm like the try to be like the Jesse Owens of writers.
You That's know? Fantastic. You can do it all.
Yeah. Well, I've tried to, you know, sort of dabble in all different kinds of things. And I think novel writing and short story writing, prose, appeal to me kind of the most. It's a little bit more freeing than the, you know, rigidity of like screenplay writing. And, you know, but I write plays too. So I've sort of gotten interested in all kinds of facets of writing. But Oh Jackie was my first novel. And so I just actually had a lot of fun with that, and people were into it. So my wife was like, hey, I think this is your, you know, maybe your best medium for writing. So you should, you know, stick with it. So then I just finished writing Oh Hemingway. And so, and the books are based on a writer who basically gets obsessed like I do with historical characters. And he himself, the writer, whose name is Andrew Brewster Crawford, nicknamed ABC, he literally transforms himself into his protagonist in order to write stories that he's writing about them better, whether it be a play like in Oh Jackie or a screenplay like in Oh Hemingway. And he just sort of becomes these people for a while. He, you know, grows the beard as Hemingway, or wears the sailing ready nautical, you know, digs as JFK, and he feels like he can write the stories if he lives the experiences and the actual happenings in the stories in reality, almost like in a Hunter S. Thompson kind of way, where he needs to experience what they experience first. So that's sort of how I arrived here at this book and this place in my life. A lot of these stories I write are stories within a story. And I feel like that's sort of the niche I'm trying to carve out for myself.
That's awesome. That's such a brilliant concept that's very untapped. I had never heard of a plot or anything quite like your book. And it sounds like you've tied together kind of where you're telling me everything that you have a background in writing. You tied those together really brilliantly for this book to kind of work on in the theater and all those kinds of things that you had experience in. So that's really neat.
Yeah, I went to school, Dickinson College in Pennsylvania, a small liberal arts school. Went there as a dramatic arts major and sort of learned all the elements of the theater and dramatic storytelling as an actor and a director. And it really had a nice base for me moving forward and coming out to LA and then just learning the craft of writing, starting out as an actor kind of on the inside of a story and then understanding what it's like to play different characters. And I think that really helped me with writing those characters to actually have played them. So yeah, it's been a long haul, but I feel like over time I've kind of, you know, thanks to experience and doing all these things for so many years, getting up every day and doing the 6 hours of writing or whatever I do, I feel like I've developed from different areas of my writing.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. And in that vein, the fact that you're going on with Hemingway, I mean, your possibilities are endless there. They really are. I mean, you can keep on going with this series forever. I love that.
Oh yeah. It's great. This next book called O Hemingway, the character goes to Paris. He walks down the same cobblestone sidewalks as Hemingway. He's turned himself into him. He's even heightened himself with heels and lifts to be huge and big. And he has worked out to be a strong boxer type like Hemingway was, pugilistic. He literally goes to the same bars. The great thing about going to Paris, you know, it's the same place it was in the 1920s, the roaring 1920s, as it is now in the roaring 2020s. So that really helped writing this next novel to be able to go to the same bars, the Closerie de Lilas, where he did all his writing, and have my character doing all his writing at that, you know, that place and that wonderful cafe. And yeah, I think it's about a writer's obsession with writing, but also obsession with a character like Hemingway, who romanticized writing, you know, completely out of proportion, which is what I love so much about him. He made writing, getting up in the morning and having your cafe latte and sharpening your pencil and writing in your notebook about the things that have happened to you, so romantic. And it made my life as a writer much more romantic. Having read Movable Feast, I think was the first book I ever read. And it's a real tour de force in what it's like to be a writer in a romantic environment like Paris. So yeah, I just finished it. And it's funny because I worked, because of the pandemic, I worked a lot harder and without distraction, because I couldn't go out to cafes, you know, kind of socialize and hobnob with people. So I was, you know, we were here at our place and, you know, just nose to the grindstone writing. And so I think I actually ended up finishing the book a lot sooner than I would have during a non-pandemic time. So
yeah, for sure. Those crazy times, it really is. It's crazy what it does for our productivity.
Oh my gosh.
And what it doesn't do. In my case, I was like, wait, what do I do after day 53 of doing the same thing over and over? It's like you wake up in the same day every day.
it's crazy. It's just so nice to be released out of captivity back into the world. Isn't it great?
Fantastic. And it's honestly made me appreciate my times with my friends and my family and stuff so much that they're like, wow, we're in person. I can see your face. This is great.
Me too. I totally agree. I appreciate people so much more than I did, you know, March 2020 or whatever it was.
So I wanted to ask you, have you had some kind of longstanding curiosity about the Kennedys or studied the Kennedys, or did that just come from studying for your book, or how did that happen? Has this been a long-term thing or no?
That is a great question. The original love or bond, I think, with the Kennedys began because I've been going to Cape Cod, Massachusetts, since I was 3 years old, every summer, never missed a summer. My parents had taken us there. I guess an aunt lived in Boston, and so they went up to check it out years and years ago. And we went up there, and I knew the Kennedys were up there. We stayed in Brewster, which is funny because the character in this book is Andrew Brewster Crawford. That lets you know how much I love the town of Brewster in Cape Cod. And the Kennedys lived in Hyannisport, and I would, as a kid, go and try to sneak my way onto the beach in front of the Kennedy compound you know, hoping to see some of the Kennedys.
Were you ever successful? And
I was. I found the route to go sort of behind the jetty and, you know, the little area there. And I wrote the opening monologue of the play that's O'Jackie's based on that November day. I wrote the opening monologue on the Nantucket Sound in front of the Kennedy compound on the beach.
Wow, what a story.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a monster of a complex. You just can't believe it when you see it. House after house, these beautiful, you know, white houses with wraparound porches and grassy lawns where they used to play, you know, Bobby and Jack and used to play football on the lawn. And, you know, just to be in that area and see it in person is really magnificent. And it's still thriving these days with the Kennedys. They're obviously still there in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going there in late August, so I might try to swing by again. But,
sure. Yeah, I want to go back. I went once. When was that even? It had to be summer of 2019, somewhere in there. I don't know.
Oh, sure.
But
recently.
I was not bold enough to try to sneak on. I was scared. I went and I was like, I'm going to do it. I was with my husband there. And then I was like, nope, back up. So we ended up going to a beach a little across the way. And we're so creepy with binoculars trying to look at the houses.
Oh, that's great.
Know what we did? I'm still so mad at myself. We flew home. It was July. We flew home July 3rd and July 4th. They were all there at the parade. Ethel on the golf cart going around the town, and we left the day before.
Man, oh wow.
That was not fun on July 4th because I was so mad that we weren't there.
You're literally there where all those wonderful pictures were taken of, you know, Jackie with the kids and the sailboats and all of it. And you kind of can't believe they were all once on that beach and hanging out at that gorgeous house. What a life. I mean,
yeah, and so surreal
for these people.
After I've watched so many clips and read and all the things, just seeing that in person would be such a surreal experience. Even when I went to the library, seeing some of the things that I had seen in pictures and stuff, it just doesn't do it justice when it's tangible in front of you, you know? So
in front of you.
Yeah. It's so strange, but that's awesome. I love it. Well, I need everyone that is listening to this podcast to buy this book because it's great and it's so entertaining and it's an incredible concept. So I will put in the description where you can buy the book on Amazon. I'm also going to put the publisher's website and I'm going to link Alexander's Instagram. But is there anywhere else you'd like anybody to find you, or are those the main places?
Well, you can also find me at alexandercarverwriter.com. That's another one. And then my Alexander Carver Facebook too. But those other Instagrams, definitely great. And what you said were perfect.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me and talking to me. And I'm so excited. Hey, guys, if you buy this book and you start to read it, tag me and Alexander in Instagram stories because I want to see. And I'm sure he does too.
Absolutely. I would love it. Thank you very much.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening, and I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Make sure you're subscribed because next week's episode is going to be one that I promise you guys you do not want to miss, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Make sure you're following me on Instagram at Kennedy Dynasty to see announcements for that next episode and giveaways I'm about to drop. Also, check out the links in the description of this episode for my merch shop and my Amazon recommendations, and I will talk to you guys next week.
Come on and vote for Kennedy. Keep America strong. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling along. Vote for Kennedy.
Hello. My name is Peter Zablocki, and I'm a historian, author, and college professor. I'm thrilled to invite you to check out Evergreen Network's History Shorts podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, join me on a journey through time, exploring the little-known and hidden gems of history. In each bite-sized episode, I'll dive into my original research to bring you intriguing historical curiosities you've probably never heard of, uncovering the fascinating stories that have shaped our world, from forgotten figures to overlooked events. And the best part? I've condensed all this historical goodness into manageable chunks, perfect for your on-the-go lifestyle. Whether you're commuting to work or squeezing in a quick break, History Shorts fits into the little time you probably think you don't have. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the History Shorts podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.